Well, the scripture reading is a rather long one. Usually we just have a verse or two. It'll be put up on the wall, or you can look in your Bible at Joshua chapter 9. It's verses 3 through 15. So either way, if you will stand in honor of the Holy Scriptures, I will read the scriptures. Joshua chapter 9. And when the inhabitants of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done unto Jericho and to Ai. Well, you remember what happened to Jericho. They marched around the city and the walls fell down. They completely destroyed Jericho. And also, after losing initial battle at Ai, they conquered that city. They did work wildly and went and made as if they had been ambassadors, and took old sacks upon their asses and wineskins old and torn and bound up, and old and patched shoes upon their feet, and old garments upon them, and all the bread of their provision was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua unto the camp at Gilgal and said unto him and to the men of Israel, "We have come from a far country. Now, therefore, make you a league with us." Well, that was a lie. They weren't from a far country. They were from the next town. But they got all their old clothes and old bread to make it look like they came from a far country. And the men of Israel said unto the Hivites. Who were the Hivites? One of the branches of Canaanites. "Perhaps you dwell among us. And how shall we make a league with you?" And they said unto Joshua, "We are thy servants." And Joshua said unto them, "Who are you? And from where come you?" And they said unto him, "From a very far country. Thy servants have come because of the name of the Lord thy God." Now, it wasn't their God. It doesn't say that. The Lord thy God. "For we have heard the fame of him and all that he did in Egypt." Well, they heard how he miraculously rescued these people out of slavery from Egypt. "And all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites that were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon, king of Heshbon, and to Og, king of Bashan, who was at Ashtaroth." These were giant kings. He heard how they destroyed them. "Wherefore our elders and all the inhabitants of our country spoke to us, saying, 'Take provisions with you for the journey and go to meet them, and say unto them, We are your servants. Therefore now make ye a league with us. This is our bread we took hot for our provision out of our houses on the day we came forth to go unto you. But now, behold, it is dry and is moldy. And these skins of wine which we filled were new. And behold, they are torn, because these our garment and our shoes have become old by reason of the very long journey.'" Now here shows the mistake the Israelites made. "And the men took of their provisions and asked no counsel at the mouth of the Lord. And Joshua made peace with them and made a league with them to let them live. And the princes of the congregation swore unto them." You may be seated. This is a story how the ancient Jews deceived our forefathers as they were fighting the war over in the land of Palestine. Our God had instructed Israel to kill every father, mother, and child in the area and to make no covenant with any of the people. But when the Gibeonites heard of what Israel's God had done for them, they decided that they would disguise themselves as being a people from a faraway land that had come to serve Israel. The conclusion is what? The Jews, the seed Israel and got them to make a covenant with him. This action saved the lives of the Gibeonites, but brought much difficulties to the Israelites. The picture I have up here, I got off Wikipedia, thank you, Wikipedia, on the subject of a villain. I think this rendering of an archetype of villain looks like what, a 19th century, what kind of businessman? Jewish. I thought that was kind of funny. How many people do you know that don't like what President Obama or Sorianto has done? How about Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton? How about Vernon Jordan? Or how about Nelson Mandela? They all support or supported what kind of ideas? Communist ideas and strategies. My question is, what is up? Nelson Mandela had something in common with Martin Luther King Jr. To the Israeli, he was a hero and is called a Minsk or great man because he helped to overthrow racism. The leaders of Israeli lauded Mandela by overseeing the deportation and imprisonment of Israeli black immigrants, saying Mandela, quote, led the fight against racism, unquote. From Mandela's first job with a law firm, what kind of law firm was his first job? Jewish law firm. And throughout his career, Jewish support was vital and forthcoming. Mandela was a strong proponent of Israelis' right to exist, despite schmoozing with various Palestinian leaders. Mandela submitted economic plans to Harry Oppenheimer for approval. This super wealthy Jew had to approve austerity for the country to repay debt. Mandela publicly mourned the death of Harry Oppenheimer in the year 2000. Oppenheimer, while supporting the exclusive status of Jews in the Israeli state, strongly disapproved of white rule in South Africa and was essentially a sugar daddy to Mandela's African National Congress, the ANC. South Africa was hit with a major foreign debt crisis in the year 1985 when a group of banks led by Jew-owned Chase Manhattan Bank withdrew substantial credit lines. The banks refused to roll over existing loans and called in many of the short-term loans. As a result, the value of the rand, that was their currency, dropped precipitously, and the government temporarily closed its financial and foreign exchange markets. Unable to meet debt obligations so suddenly, the government declared a standstill on repayments of approximately $14 billion of South Africa's $24 billion total external debt. The whites couldn't keep paying on the debts and therefore had to be replaced by the Jewish-controlled communist African National Congress. Despite calls to renounce $24 billion in South African foreign debt as obtained for reasons odious to the local population and hence non-payable under international law, Mandela repaid the bankers with interest. As the nation mourns Mandela as a hero, at the same time drowning in debt to the international Jewish bankers. When Mandela was released from prison in the year 1990, his media saturation coverage was unprecedented. and has not been matched by anyone since. A clue is given by Fox News reporter Bill O'Reilly, who said, quote, Mandela was a communist, but he was a great man. I won't say anything bad about him, unquote. Now, Mandela received the Nobel Peace Prize. I think receiving the Peace Prize means you're a big criminal. He received it. Obama received it. Everybody receives the Peace Prize. The Presidential Medal of Freedom from the United States. He wasn't even a United States citizen. The Lenin Peace Prize from the Soviet Union. And numerous other honors from countries, universities, and institutions. In a contrary video, Mandela and his comrades in the ANC are singing, Kill the Boer. Meaning what? Kill the white farmer of South Africa. Even more chilling than the words of the murderous song is the near frenzied behavior it stirs up in many of the assembled mob members. This is clearly incitement to genocide by the top members of South Africa's ANC ruling regime, the same individuals who instantly pose as peace advocates. But didn't President Ronald Reagan classify Mandela's African National Congress as a terrorist group? Reagan cited the NAC as one of the world's, quote, most notorious terrorist groups, unquote. Well, if they were classified as ANC, who undid it? Well, it was President George W. Bush took Mandela off the list. Which president do you believe? You believe Ronald Reagan, or you believe President Bush? Which one of you think correctly assessed the character of this man? The ANC was murdering anyone who opposed them or anyone who was in the wrong place at the wrong time, including over 20,000 blacks. I'll tell you what Mandela was. He was a Jewish puppet who reversed South Africa's, what kind of government they have? Apartheid government. No wonder he is being lauded as, quote, the world's most wonderful man, unquote. He's another Jewish puppet, is being rewarded for his pro-Jewish behavior. Although Mr. Mandela is not a Zulu, he is the son of a chief of the Thembus who were long ago absorbed into, and I can't pronounce this word, the Xhosas. Following the Sharpeville Massacre of 1960, the views of Mandela and a number of his colleagues hardened into a belief that only an armed struggle would suffice. On the 16th of December, 1961, that's the anniversary of the Battle of Blood River, a battle between the Boers and the Zulus in the year 1838, a new military organization, and I can't pronounce the words in Afrikaans, but it means the spear of the nation was set up. Mandela was its commander in chief. Over the next 2 years, they carried out over 200 attacks and sent some 300 people abroad for military training. But wait a minute. What was said about the Battle of Blood River? What happened on that day where tomorrow it would be 175 years ago? The Boers had settled South Africa, and then the British came and imposed civil rights for the blacks and the whites. They enforced an, quote, all are equal, unquote, regime. As a result, the Boers decided to leave and go in covered wagons to the open land to the northwest. Well, they were met by the Zulus, who were also coming into land from the opposite direction, from the southeast. After a couple of failed attempts of a treaty to ensure peace for both peoples, the Zulus began their total destruction of the Boers. The Boers had 468 settlers in covered wagons, fighting against about 30,000 warriors. These are warriors of the tribe of Zulus. What did the Boers do? Well, they made a covenant between them and their God. Maybe we should make a covenant between us and our God. The vow was actually written by an ancestor of the Vissers, who we know. The ancestor wrote it. I will read you what it said. Now, each night they would say this: "My brothers and fellow citizens, here we stand in the presence of the Holy God, creator of heaven and earth, to make a vow unto him, that if his protection shall be with us, and he gives our enemy into our hands so that we might be victorious over him, that this day and date every year shall be spent as a memorial and a day of thanksgiving, just as a Sabbath is spent, and that we shall erect a temple to his honor wherever it will be pleasing to him, and that we shall also instruct our children that they must also share in it, as well as for our generations yet to come. Because the honor of his name shall thereby be glorified, and the glory and honor of the victory shall be given him." Unquote. They said that every night. Well, you know what happened. The Voortrekkers won an outstanding battle. Or should I more correctly say that the God of the Voortrekkers defeated the Zulus. No one of the Voortrekkers was killed, and there were thousands of Zulus who died. So many Zulus were killed that the Kam River was red with the blood of the slain Zulus, and thus the name, the Battle of Blood River. As Mark Downey said in his sermon on Blood River, I think it was a year ago he gave this sermon, he said, quote, "The Afrikaners know their survival is completely dependent on what?" Well, he said, divine intervention. Blood River has been called the mythical underpinnings of apartheid rule. The Christian Boers did not ascribe the military victory to their armaments. They interpreted the battle as a sign from God. With the battle behind them, they believed even more strongly that white predominance over blacks is the will of God. Indeed, it is their mandate. It is our mandate to take dominion of the earth. And to that we all should say, amen. December 16th is still observed by some Boers as a Sabbath called the Day of the Vow. On that day, their pioneer ancestors made a pledge to God, which he honored by ordering his angelic legions. They were in this battle too, the angels, to assist in the battle between the forces of light and the powers of darkness. South Africa is again facing fearful odds. Who, like their forefathers, would be forced to bend their knee and renew themselves as God's covenant people. He then goes on and says this: "We in America are likewise under an oppressive, dark, antichrist adversary, because we have fallen away from being a Christian nation and have been whoring after strange gods. our blood river is coming. And we will lose the battle if the Lord of hosts is not our commander-in-chief. Unquote. What a great few paragraphs that Mark Danny gave us. Which is it, Christian? Was Blood River a victory by our God, or was it not? How could 468 farmers, their occupation was farming, wasn't warriors, how could 468 farmers not suffer any serious injury and kill close to 15,000 Zulu warriors because they made a vow to their God? All I know is that their children failed to honor their vow, and therefore their punishment has come to pass. So tomorrow, when the Boers should celebrate the Day of the Covenant, they will instead be celebrating Reconciliation Day. I know what gods the people of South Africa are worshiping, but what gods are we worshiping here in America? We have bought into the lie of the Jewish multiculturalism, just like most of the Israel nations have. America was once separate in its worship. What happened? I'm going to now tell you about the secret Bulai organization. The same as Nelson Mandela and the African National Congress, the blacks who were called the leaders of America's blacks, did you know that they all are members of the Black Secret Society that has been closely associated with maintaining the grip of Jewish supremacy on people of color? When I found this out, I blew my mind. The same secret societies that house Negroes answer to have a long history rooted in the physical and mental enslavement of Africans around the globe. The Black Secret Society, this is their seal. Who are the Greeks around here? Sigma. Now, anyone should know that. The circle is what? The circumference is pi times diameter. So it's sigma pi phi. P-H-I. That's the name of the fraternity. Sigma pi phi. It was incorporated and founded May 15, 1904 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. This was the first black fraternity in America before the first black college fraternity. That was Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity. Was incorporated December 4th, 1906. Now, what is the Bulai? 1904. It's a black Greek secret society that is based on another secret society. Oh, it's based on another secret society. Does anybody know what secret society it's based on? What? At Yale University. Skull and Bones. It's based on Skull and Bones. Now, Cecil Rhodes and Rothschild, who's a Jew, and others helped start the organization. Skull and Bones is an organization that derived from a German secret Freemasonic society that picks 15 men from Yale each year. Now, the alumni has had an astounding 3 presidents from the United States have been from this 15 people picked a year. 3 presidents of the United States, a couple of secretary of states, a bunch of senators, representatives, governors, mayors, CEOs, and et cetera. What a group. Now, we'll show you a map. There's a map of Connecticut right there. You see, there's New York. I'm going to be talking about where Yale University is located. Yale University is located in what city? Right there. New Haven, Connecticut. What other cities in the news in the last year in Connecticut? There's Danbury. It's located right there. New Haven. Oh, it's real close. It's real close to Sandy Hook. Remember that map. The blacks had just been through slavery, and that was because of the Jews. the war between the states. Well, the Jews started the war. Reconstruction because of the Jews. But now they face something different. I don't know how many heard of Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey was what kind of individual? Was he a Jew? Was he a black? Was he a white guy?
Black.
He was black. Marcus Garvey was a black. And he was for the black people. He was a true leader of black people. And he led a big push to lead his people, his black people, back to Africa, mainly to Liberia. But the Jews couldn't have that. So they started the Bulla. The Bulla, the primary founder was Dr. Henry McGee Minton and five others. So the next slide will show you a picture of these people. Dr. Henry McPhee's right here. And then you have the other five guys right here. Henson, Howard, Jackson, Abel, and Warwick, all Philadelphia. That was the founders of the Bulla. 1904. That was in Philadelphia. Then a founding member of the New York City chapter, you heard of this guy, W.E.B. Du Bois. He said the Bulla was created to, quote, keep the black professional away from the ranks of Marcus Garvey, unquote, who was a black. It needs to be pointed out that just after a decade of the founding of the Bulla, Marcus Garvey's Back to Africa movement and his newspaper, The Negro World, was reaching a million plus people without television, radio, or the internet. So it was a very successful organization. It was very important to steal the black professional away from Garvey because an Afrocentric organization that articulated and captured the black professional would not give the Jews a safe haven in the black community. So the Bulla, the remaking of the House Negro, was necessary to build a group of Negroes who had an investment in protecting the Jewish system. This was post-Reconstruction, which took away the articulate Negro, now desiring to replace them with organized institutions to keep them away from self-improvement. Wow. So we find in the same time period as the founding of the Bulla, the founding of four black fraternities, Alpha Pi Alpha, Kappa Alpha Psi, Omega Psi Phi, and Phi Beta Sigma, four black fraternities. Then there was also four black female sororities. See if anywhere at your school. Alpha Kappa Alpha, Delta Sigma Theta, Zeta Phi Beta, and Sigma Gamma Rho. Followed by the ninth member of the squares, which was the Bulla Foundation, Sigma Pi Phi. Well, we also find the founding of, what else happened? Got the Bulla, they got the black fraternities, the female fraternities, the colleges. They now founded the NAACP. What year? 1909. And also the Urban League. What year? 1910. And the Federal Reserve. What year? You know that. 1913. Came shortly after the Bulla. Now I know. I knew before, but now I know why. The NAACP was headed by a Jew. And so was the Jewish influence on the Urban League and other civil rights movements. The Jews headed it. The Boys of the Bulla was one of the strongest opponents of Garvey. And he helped stop one of the strongest grassroots movements of the last century. Therefore, you won't read it about in the school history books. Garvey's plan was to take as many Africans from the Americas and start a settlement in the nation of Liberia and help this new nation produce and control their own rubber crops and other industries and natural resources. I'll give you a portion of what Garvey wrote. Marcus Garvey's plan was, if the oil of Africa is good for Rockefeller's interest, well, he's picking the wrong person, isn't he? If iron is good for the Carnegie Trust, then these minerals are good for us. Why should we allow Wall Street, Jewish organization, and capitalist groups of America and other countries to exploit our country when they refuse to give us a fair chance in the countries of our adoption? Why should not Africa give to the world its Black Rockefeller, Rothschild, and Henry Ford, unquote? What would have been the result of Garvey's plan? It would have meant no Goodyear, no U.S. Steel, no Standard Oil as we know it today, because it would have set a precedent that would have made all Africans aware of their land and mineral wealth. What would this have done? This would have shattered the financial arm of Jewry. Du Bois and a man by the name of Alvin Locke, the first Black Cecil Rhodes scholar, publicly defiled Garvey by calling him a quote-unquote gorilla any chance they had. Locke said, quote, "We hope the white man delivers cause we crushed a great black thing. But we'll know he'll deliver or our people will attack and plague us forevermore," unquote. Du Bois and Locke were paid off by their Jewish friends that they would receive a certain percentage of the wealth that they stole from Africa. The bula is a Greek term which means, quote, "the advisors to the king," unquote. And the king that they receive direction from and protection is like their logo, which is the Sphinx. I showed you the Sphinx on their insignia. They are the Jewish secret societies responsible for world supremacy. Some of the names they go by are Phi Beta Kappa, the Illuminati, the Rhodes Rothschild Secret Societies, Skull and Bones, the Freemasons, the Round Table Group, the New World Order, One World Government, Carnegie, and numerous other wealthy family organizations. They have now 120 chapters in the world. Anywhere there are professional blacks, the bula congregates. The members of the bula has wealth that cannot be matched by any other blacks anywhere in the world. I will show you some of the people that are in the bula. You might know the fellow on the far left. His name is Bill Cosby. Then Wilder, Johnson, Woodson. Oh, who's that? The fifth person from the left? Martin Luther King was a member of the bula? Gray. Oh, who's the guy on the far right? Jesse Jackson. Anybody who's a professional and has success as a member of the bula. I found many more. I'll read you some of them. The person who performed the first open heart surgery was named by Daniel Hale Williams. Ralph Bunch, the former UN ambassador. Al Sharpton. Whitney Young, former president of the Urban League. We already had Martin Luther King Jr. Benjamin Mays. W.E.B. Du Bois. Carter C. Woodson, who is a historian. John H. Johnson, the publisher of Ebony and Jet magazines. Maynard Jackson, former mayor of Atlanta. Hank Aaron. Ooh, former home run king of the major baseball leagues. Elvin B. E. Hayes, NBA basketball great. Lynn Swan, NFL Hall of Famer. Tom Bradley, television personality. Dennis Archer, former mayor of Detroit. Douglas Wilder, former governor of Virginia. David Dinkins, former mayor of New York City. On and on you go, thousands more. Babula followed the tenets of the Freemasonic Order of the Skull and Bones of Yale University, which was started very close to the time of our God's great victory over the Zulus. The Skull and Bones was started in the year 1832, and God's great victory of the Zulus was 1838. It also was a time in America where we also had a great victory. What victory was that? President Jackson's victory over the National Bank. What? Be a great time to live, wouldn't it? It was incorporated for business purposes as Russell Trust. It was established in the year 1776 at Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut. The NAACP co-founder, Joel Springarm, who was a Jew, was a known spy of the African community and also was very influential in the founding of the Boule. The NAACP, who was supposed to defend the countless atrocities against black people, is really on the contrary. They didn't. What did they do? They actually helped the Jews who founded their organizations. It was the ADL of the B'nai B'rith. Oh, B'nai B'rith, that's Jewish. ADL is Jewish. Who consisted of the leaders of the Jews. It was the same as the Gestapo, who has reigned over for over 100 years for this great conspiracy. It started when? After the murder committed by Leo Frank, who was a Jew, of a young girl who worked at a pencil factory, which he was the boss. After Leo's sentence was lowered by the governor from a death sentence to a life sentence, a day before he left the office, the local boys went to the jail, took Leo captive, threw a rope over the tree across from the house where Mary used to live, and lynched him. Then the ADL was formed. They're not going to lynch any more of our Jews. The ADL controlled the actions of the NAACP and the Urban League. They controlled Martin L. Luther King, Stokely Carmichael, Jesse Jackson, and on and on and on. The NAACP was begun on whose birthday? Abe Lincoln's 100th birthday, February 12th, 1909. It was actually started by more leftist Jews than blacks. Rabbi Stephen Wise and Jane Addams, who both had direct links to a secret society called the Round Table Group that was formed in 1881 at Oxford University and Ruskin College in England by Cecil Rhodes with the money he gained from the colonization of South Africa. Rabbi Wise also founded the American Jewish Congress, which is a Zionist organization that supported the European Jewish colonization of what was called Palestine. The NAACP does not support Africans in America. That is their illusion. They actually carry out ideals and philosophies of the Round Table Group. The NAACP is the most notably known for initiating anti-lynch bill during the 1910s. They called for the government to pass a bill prohibiting the lynching of Africans. What many people don't know is the bill did not pass Congress in the year 1959. They only passed this bill if they receive in turn black intelligence. This is how the Boule ties in. For every man of the Boule must be a lifetime member of the NAACP. W.E.B. Du Bois was the first Negro to become involved with the NAACP. It was Rabbi Wise's choice. Now, Rabbi Wise, of course, is a Jew. For the organization, due to the fact Du Bois was a member of the first black Greek society called Sigma Pi Phi, or the Boule, founded a few years before the NAACP. I got a map of New Haven, Connecticut. I found this very interesting. New Haven was founded in the year 1638 by English Puritans. How was the city laid out? What was the plan? They had 8 streets. There, top, bottom, left, right, and 2 across. We're laid in a 4x4 grid, creating what is now commonly known as the 9-square plan. Now, New Haven is the home of Ivy League school, Yale University. In the year 1640, the town's theocratic government and 9-square plan were in place. The colony was an intolerant theocracy. Intolerant. They wouldn't get along good in our country now. They did not permit other churches to be established. And a very interesting side note, New Haven was the refuge for 3 of the judges who had signed the death warrant of Charles I of England and who were being pursued by Charles II. Now, you have Ezra Stiles, who was one of the earlier mayors of New Haven. I found this very interesting. Stiles struck up a close friendship with Rabbi Chaim Isaac Garagau, who was, of course, a Jew, during Stiles' residence in Newport in 1773. Stiles, who was a high Freemason, records 28 meetings to discuss a wide variety of topics from the Kabbalah to the politics of the Holy Land. Stiles included a portrait of the rabbi as one of his prize collections. That's where the city goes downhill. New Haven is the birthplace of former president. Well, let's see. Yale University has a Freemasonic skull and bones. Oh, when George H.W. Bush was in the skull and bones, his son George W. Bush was born there. In addition to being the site of the college educations of both presidents, father and son Bush, New Haven was also temporary home of former President William Howard Taft, who also was a member of the skull and bones, Gerald Ford, and Bill Clinton. Clinton met his lovely wife, Hillary, while the two were students at Yale Law School. John Kerry, who's now the Secretary of State of the United States, he was a member of Skull and Bones. All these people from Skull and Bones get all these fantastic jobs, both in government and in private industry. Roger Sherman, the only person to sign all 4 basic documents of American independence, was an inhabitant of New Haven. Eli Whitney, the inventor of the cotton gin, he was a member of New Haven. Noah Webster, dictionary publisher, and a host of other people who are now famous in American history also lived in New Haven. Now I'm going to show you something. There's New Haven, the city of the 9 squares, right? I bet everyone here did the magic squares. You put the numbers 1 to 9 in the 9 squares. And so each, where do you go, what, horizontally or vertically or diagonally, it all adds up to what number? 8 plus 1 is 9, plus 6 is 3, plus 5 plus 7 is 15, 4 plus 9 is 13, plus 2 is 15, 6 plus 7 is 13, plus 2 is 15, 6 plus 9 is 15, 11 plus 4 is 15, 13 plus 2 is 15, 9 plus 6 is 15. It all adds up to 15. Oh. How many new members are added to Skull and Bones each year? Another interesting fact, New Haven was founded by the Puritans, was renamed New, and they added an E, New Heaven, in the year 1644. Well, now my conclusion. It's John 8:44. You are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. Now, Jesus Christ spoke these words to what people? Jews. And if you look at verse 31, verse 48, verse 52, and verse 57, at the end of his message, it says, they took up stones to cast at him. I guess they would, after Jesus called these people the sons of the devil, and that they're nothing but liars. I guess it would make them angry. They tried to kill him with stones. America has only one holiday for any one person, and it is for the Jewish civil rights leader, Michael King Jr. And now the whole world is going gaga over the former communist and regime changer, Nelson Mandela, or his real name, which I cannot pronounce right, Rohalala. Last week, they even had a day of prayer for the dead communist leader, who's nothing more than Jewish-backed. Was Martin Luther King or Mandela Christians? No. They were the enemy of Christian doctrine. So why would any Christian honor these two anti-Christian men? Now I'm going to tell you about something else. The top man, Harold Corlander. Anybody know him? The guy down here? Alex Haley, the writer of Roots. Now, Alex Haley said that he was a seventh generation descendant of Kunta Kinte. Kunta Kinte was who? The main character of the book, right? It's just like what happened to Harold Corlander. Corlander had written seven novels, his most famous being called The African, published in the year 1967. The novel was the story of a slave's capture in Africa, his experiences on a slave ship, and his struggle to retain his native culture in a hostile new world. This was nothing more than a book of fiction that Harold Corlander had written, 1967. Well, a little over 10 years later, 1978, Alex Haley, the renowned author of Roots, came under fire in a plagiarism lawsuit that was launched by fellow author Harold Corlander. Haley claimed he had spent a decade researching his heritage for his historical novel, which in the year 1977 was adapted as a widely successful television miniseries, and I watched it. That same year, he was awarded a Pulitzer Prize. And Springarm, who was a Jew, the founder of the NAACP, he got his medal for the book. When you work for the Jews, you get well rewarded. Corlander filed suit in the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York, charging that Alex Haley, the author of Roots, had copied 81 passages from his novel. I put this up here so you could read it. Corlander's pretrial memorandum and the copyright infringement lawsuit claim, quote, defendant Haley had access to and substantially copied from The African. That was the book he wrote, which is a book of fiction. Without The African, Roots would have been a very different and less successful novel. And indeed, it's doubtful that Mr. Haley could have written Roots without The African. Mr. Haley copied language, thoughts, attitudes, incidents, situations, plots, and character. Now, an English professor at Columbia University who was an expert on plagiarism testified that Roots was, quote, clear and irrefutable, unquote. and that the copying of passages was, quote, significant and extensive, unquote. Who won? After a five-week trial in federal district court, Colander and Haley settled the case with a financial settlement of $5, $500, $650,000, and a statement that, quote, Alex Haley acknowledges and regrets that various materials from The African by Harold Colander found their way into his book, Roots. In an interview with BBC Television, Judge Ward, that was the judge of the case, stated, quote, Alex Haley perpetuated a hoax on the public, unquote. Another Jewish hoax I was taken in by. The media paid scant attention to the suit and even then failed to explore the real gist of the scandal. What's the real gist of the scandal? Namely, that the author of a nonfiction book plagiarized from a fictional one. Because Alex Haley said, this is the truth. This is my ancestors. And if that wasn't bad enough, did Alex Haley really write the book? Murray Fisher, who was a Jew, one-time Playboy editor, and Haley's boss, oh, they both worked at Playboy magazine when he worked there, allegedly ghostwrote both the literary classic, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, and the award-winning Roots, written by a Jew. Whoa! Should we ask counsel of the Lord our God? Should we not believe and follow anything that the people whom our Savior called liars say and do? If we would do this, then why do we honor communists and sodomites? You know, this past week, the people of Ukraine toppled the statue of Lenin and chopped it up with huge hammers in protest of their government. Let us not make the same mistake that our ancestors committed. Somehow I think the traitorous, brainwashing, Jew-controlled media will neglect to say one good thing about any of these innocent white people suffering brutal deaths at the hand of South African blacks. Well, they go on and on about how great Nelson Mandela was. And I didn't see anything on TV or radio. Nothing. I also remember Mandela set off bombs to purposely kill unsuspecting white people. That's exactly the same thing they now call terrorism. I guess one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. It's only a matter of how the Jew-controlled media portrays it. I'm going to end this by showing you a clip that shows the white genocide in South Africa, and it's kind of gruesome. There's an old lady who's bludgeoned to death, an entire white family slaughtered by watching TV, a woman gang raped, strung up, and gutted. Even little white kids are horribly murdered, and a woman chopped to pieces. White genocide in South Africa. And you're honoring this criminal, this butcher. And we have been honoring all kinds of people. The black people in America are not working for the black people. The people that are rewarded are working for our enemy, the Jews. We're in a bad strait. Where should truth come from? It should come from a church. Were there Judeo churches? What's that? The nation has completely changed. Well, I trust that we ask counsel of our God. Our God is a great God. Remember the battle of December 16th, 1838. He delivered them. How could 468 farmers defend himself against an innumerable number of Zulus who were warriors. Even the Zulus acknowledged it was the angels firing on the white clouds. Thank God that he made a covenant with Father Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and their seed. We are part of their seed. You can go and join the crowd. And you can worship Santa Claus, which is really their savior this time of the year. You can worship him if you want. I wouldn't do it. We're close to the end. God has called the people to be faithful to him. I pray that we remain faithful to our God. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel.